The big question, how's the banking sector doing?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good day to you from American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Bank of America lost more than $7 billion in its latest quarter. The bank says that's because of a one-time charge related to credit and debit card reform. On the other hand, investment bank Goldman Sachs reported today it made nearly $2 billion last quarter. So we're going to dig a little deeper and ask the question, why the disparity in this morning's earnings? J.P. Morgan Fund's chief market strategist David Kelly is with us live from New York with that. Good morning, David.
Glad to be here.
All right. Tale of two banks, right? How generally are banks doing right now?
Well, overall, the banking situation is actually improving. Obviously, we got a big charge this morning from Bank of America. They've decided to recognize some of the future costs they see from financial regulation. But if you look past that charge, what we're seeing from Goldman, from Bank of America, from other banks, is a general improvement in capital ratios. They're building up their capital. They're trying to be stronger banks for the future.
Talk about charge. When you say charge, what does that mean?
What it means is they recognize that various changes in financial reform are going to close off areas of profitability in the future. And so rather than take those losses or those reductions in profit as they come, they want to recognize them up front to essentially be honest with the shareholders about what all this is going to mean for them.
So it's a one-time charge. It's really, it's not even money, right? It's not real money.
That's right. It's just an accounting entry to say this is what we think the cost of these provisions will be for our institution.
Very quickly, David, talk about the foreclosures we've seen, many of which have been suspended. How are those affecting the bank so far?
Well, we're still seeing the after effects of the huge financial crisis and the huge bust in the mortgage business. And I think the delay in foreclosures, some of the putbacks of foreclosures where banks actually end up having to buy back the loans themselves, these things are muddying up the system. And I think they are slowing down a recovery in housing overall. But the big picture is the housing industry will gradually recover, and the banks do appear to be gradually strengthening here.
David Kelly over at J.P. Morgan Funds. David, thanks.
You're very welcome.
Word this morning from the government that housing starts in September rose 0.3% to a 5-month high. That, according to the Commerce Department, said requests for building permits dropped. I mentioned briefly how some banks have suspended foreclosures for the time being because of allegations that many homes were seized improperly. Well, what does this mean for new home builders? Chicago Public Radio Tony Arnold reports.
Talk to home builders, and you're likely to hear this.
Number one competitor these days has been the foreclosure market.
That's John Wozniak with J. Lawrence Homes in suburban Chicago. Wozniak says a few years ago, before the housing market blew up, his company was building 36,000 homes per year. This year, it's closer to 3,000. Housing analyst Chris Huckstead is with Metro Study. He says the latest foreclosure mess could give home builders a boost.
With all of a sudden this kind of a red flag being raised on foreclosures, more buyers might be pushed in towards the new home market.
Wozniak is hesitant to celebrate just yet, though.
Stalling the foreclosures that are occurring is only prolonging the fear or the anxiety.
Wozniak says on the plus side, business is down so much, he can't really be hurt any worse. In Chicago, I'm Tony Arnold from Marketplace.
Let's do the numbers. Global markets are conflicted at the moment. Asian shares were higher with anticipation of all the bank earnings coming out today. And now that they're out, European shares are creeping a little lower. Wall Street yesterday, the Dow added 80 points to close at 11,143.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Reputation Defender, helping doctors, lawyers, and small business owners monitor, protect, and improve their online reputations. ReputationDefender.com. By The Economist, covering news and ideas from around the world and the connections between them. The Economist, on newsstands, in bookstores, and at The Economist online. And by MassMutual, providing insurance coverage for eligible breast cancer survivors at massmutual.com/BC awareness.
Healthcare giant Johnson & Johnson says it eked out a 2% increase in its third quarter profits today. And that's after a recall that the company had to recall Tylenol and Benadryl and Motrin because of mold, because of a moldy and musty smell. Now, those recalls of millions of bottles of the products could affect the bottom line by sending parents to other lesser-known brands, reporter Andrea Gardner explains.
My baby Olivia is running a fever. Usually, I'd give her infant Tylenol, but it was recalled back in April. So now generic acetaminophen is my only choice. I don't usually give my daughter generic drugs. I buy it for myself, but when it comes to my baby, I go with the brand. I asked consumer psychologist Kit Yarrow what that's all about.
Parents are just 100% dialed into caring for their kids, and especially when we're dealing with health products, if there's any risk at all that you're jeopardizing that, that's just going to drum up a boatload of guilt. That's really driving a lot of brand purchases, that not only is your kid going to get over their cold, but that you're a good parent.
But after months of having only generics to choose from, parents have realized there's no boogeyman in the bottle. Yarrow says this could be a game changer, especially in the down economy.
I don't see parents going back to branded products when they've realized that generics work just the same.
An early survey suggests moms are split. Just about half said they still trust brands like Tylenol the most. About a quarter said J&J products are about the same as generics. But only a small percentage of parents would need to change their minds to create a boon for generics manufacturers. Many drugstores have already asked them to ramp up production. One of the top makers, Activist, says it's increased production fivefold for its children's ibuprofen products. But pharmaceutical analyst Damian Conover with Morningstar says when the Johnson's brands hit the shelf, the balance could shift.
You've got a brand name that's very entrenched in consumers' minds. That is going to be very difficult for other providers of these over-the-counter medicines to really come in and displace after the manufacturing comes back online.
Conover says expect a barrage of ads from J&J in 2011 and 12 with a message of trust and changes made in the wake of the recall. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
And finally, to save energy, the European Union's banned light bulbs of more than 60 watts. But one German entrepreneur who produces 75 and 100-watt bulbs has found a way around the ban. Siegfried Rothauser is selling his Chinese-made bulbs as heat balls. And as for the energy saving, Rothauser says he'll give some of the heat ball proceeds to saving the rainforest. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiatakis. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
You don't like the government's education policy? Well, you could always try this.
Placing bets on a lot of different ideas, many of which are bound to fail. But that's kind of the point. Fail hard, fail fast, and let the winning ideas rise to the top.
Race to the top. In fact, I'm Kai Rizdahl. When government goes venture capitalist, maybe we all win. Freakonomics Radio is back next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.